you guys out there that have something that needs repair, let me know, and maybe we can work through it together. I don't mind showing. There's plenty of YouTube videos, by the way, that's come out on, you know, other hams that have demonstrated their ability to take something apart and fix it. So, you know, I'm not alone. I mean, there's a lot of repair techs out there. And it's a skill, you know, and it's, you learn over, like, you know, like any skill, any trade or any profession, you know, even the doctor's trade, you know, you have to, you know, you could study, and then when you get your hands, you roll up your sleeves and you get your hands into something, that's how you learn, and that's how I learn. I think that's how most people learn. I was never really good learning just by reading something in a book. But when you dig down into something and, you know, play around, you know, it's a lot easier. At least for me it was. So, anyway, with that, I did some research on the Citizens Band frequencies that I was operating on. As I said, I did have a license. And I discovered that the CB consisted of 23 channels. And again, I'm only saying this now because it gives, like, again, a background of, you know, how I got into this and how I learned from the beginning. If anybody's interested in doing this, you know, if you want to become a technician, I'm putting all the test equipment aside because there's a myriad of test equipment that you could use to make different measurements. On the transmitter and on the receiver and making sure it, you know, it meets all the specifications that it's designed for. But as far as the CB is concerned, I learned about the channelization and how many channels, and Citizens Band originally was a business band and became what they called a Citizens Band. It was known as Class D operation. That's D as in David. I'm not familiar with the other classes in that particular, on the 11 meter band. And basically it was going from channel 1, it was 23 channels, channel 1 to channel 23, and I'm going by memory now, and see if my memory is still good. I think channel 1 was 26.965 megacycles, and each channel was 10 kc wide, and with a couple of gaps, up to 23 channels, and I believe that channel 23 was 27.255, and then later on the FCC decided to expand the Citizens Band channelization scheme, and they brought it from 23 channels up to 40 channels, which I believe now is 27.405. Now, of course, I'm not doing the math in my head to figure it out, but if you want to calculate 10 kc for each channel, you can, you know, you can figure that out. I'm not doing it right on paper as I speak. So, you know, the first thing that I figured out is, you know, the channelization scheme and how that's set up. And then, of course, you know, reading about how transmitters work, and, you know, all the way down to, you know, the basic oscillator that, you know, that is designed to transmit on the frequency, or oscillators with these synthesized radios. And when I say oscillator, because the original CB that I got, that I got as a gift, was crystal controlled. And of course, I asked myself, what is a crystal and how does a crystal work? Which is another, you know, interesting subject itself. There's many different crystals out there that are made by many different manufacturers, some of which have recently gone out of business, like, for instance, International Crystal, which was a very large manufacturer, and they produced crystals worldwide, and they were in business for many, many years, even advertised at QST, are now out of business, which was really a shock when I found out about it. And I guess the reason for that is because of the invention and advancement in electronics as far as using synthesizers and phase lock loops and anything else that I can't think of right now to take the place of all the crystals that we used in the CB radios and in any transmitter, you know, for that fact. A CB was a big business as far as, a CB radio was a big, you know, business as far as using crystals because the original CBs were crystal controlled, and the radio that I had in my possession was an 8-channel radio, so it used 8 crystals for transmitting on 8 different channels of my choice, and whatever channel I wanted to transmit on, this gave me, actually, I'm thinking back, this radio DAC did not have that, it only had transmit crystals, not receive crystals. It was 8-channel transmit, but it had a tunable receiver, which means it had a VFO, a tunable oscillator, receiving between channels 1 and 23. But as far as transmitting, that was crystal controlled, and that had to meet the FCC specifications as far as frequency tolerance is concerned, because that was their spec. Yes, Paul.
Was that radio that Lafayette, I think 20C or 20D, was that the one?
Still about Lafayette?
Yes. It sounds like you're describing the same one that I had. You know, it had a 20C, and then, you know, which was, you know, you didn't have to have crystals for, like you said, but 8 transmit crystals that you could actually tell, you know, unplug them and put different ones in to get different channels. Back to you, Amy.
Yes, that's exactly right. And by the way, I want to say this again. The reason why I'm mentioning all this is who gave me the foundation of getting into heavier or deeper repair work, because I had to understand what the radio does and how and what it's supposed to do. And so on. So that's why I'm mentioning, you know, all this in the first place, because I had to start somewhere. You just don't take a radio. If you don't know what the radio is doing, you don't even know where to start. You know, and that's common sense. So it brings to the question, you know, that when somebody gives me something to fix, you know, the first question I ask, which is a very obvious question, what is it not doing? What is it not doing that it's supposed to do? So, you know, and then if I understand the radio and what it's supposed to do, and it's not doing that, then I can start from that point on. But getting back to what you said, Paul, the HE-20C, and I have a 20C in my possession. Actually, I have two of them. Some things are hard to let go of. Yes, that's an 8-channel crystal-controlled transmit and receive. But the radio that I am referring to, which I didn't mention, is an HB-115A, also made by Lafayette. That did not have, that I recall, I really have to look at the, I'm on my memory now, and it's vague. I think it's only 8-channel transmit, but not receive. I think it's got a tunable receiver, but I don't think on the front panel it has a crystal tune switch. The HE-20C does. The 20C, it's a two-position switch, and that radio I know pretty well because that was the first rig that I actually converted to 10 meters when I first got my amateur license, and I can go into that. I can talk about that. Because I happen to have in my possession at the time an HE-20C. And that's another story. I'll save that for next week as we discuss this further. But On the HD-115A, there was no crystal tune switch. It was only tunable receive. Okay, so where do we go from here? Let me see if I can collect my thoughts and see how I'm going to proceed at, you know, going through the overview of, you know, what I did with the first rig that I was able to get my hands on, the HB-115A. So, getting back to what you said, Paul, yeah, you could go, and I did many times. I went to Lafayette up in Syosset. I even rode my bicycle up there from where I used to live. And I used to exchange crystals from one channel to another. Let's say I didn't want channel 1, I wanted channel 2 or channel 3 or what have you. And I used to play around with swapping crystals. Right now in my possession, to this day, I have quite a few crystals in my collection of CB crystals and amateur radio ST-243 crystals, which is a different size crystal. So, as I said, there are many, many manufacturers of crystals, all different shapes, sizes, colors, and so on, and some interesting names that are, you know, as I said, are no longer in business.
W2BC.
Okay, what crystal do you have, Rich? Go ahead.
I was going to ask the question, have you found in your career that the crystals can break? Go ahead.
Very much so. A crystal is made of a piece of quartz. And going back to the original license manual, in fact, there was a question on that. For your general or technician exam, there was a question regarding crystals. You know, what does the crystal look like schematically? You know, what represents the crystal itself? It's a piece of quartz that vibrates at a certain frequency. It has a certain impedance. It's placed in a certain type of circuit. One of the circuits which I'm familiar with is called the Pierce Oscillator, P-I-E-R-C-E, if I'm spelling it right. A Pierce Oscillator is an oscillator that normally uses a crystal as the frequency element instead of a inductor or a capacitor. And the crystal is carefully placed in the circuit. It's usually a tube circuit. So it'll oscillate at that frequency and it'll produce a nice, hopefully clean waveform. Pierce oscillators were very well known in the amateur field and also in the CB radios that were built. Both of the oscillators, also the crystal controlled oscillators were in that design, just to mention that. So, you know, we could talk about crystal technology and how that's come about and, you know, how it's, and crystals itself, but that's a separate topic. So, as you can see, things branch off to other topics over time.
Andy, if a radio's not working, would the crystal be the last thing you'd look at, or the first thing, or somewhere in between? And how do you tell whether a crystal is broken or not?
Okay, very good question, and I'm not sure if I even answered the first one, because you did ask, you know, a crystal is made out of quartz. I started to say that. I didn't finish by saying that it is fragile. If you drop a crystal on the ground from a few feet up, you can break and shatter the crystal. And that has happened to me. So, it's a very thin piece of quartz. And regarding the thickness of the crystal, there's a rule of thumb, which may or may not be obvious, that the thinner the crystal, the higher the frequency it vibrates. when you get a crystal resonating at a certain frequency, and I'm using the word resonating because it is a schematically, electrically, it does represent a tuned circuit, even though it's a piece of quartz. It does just that. It resonates at that frequency, and the center of the crystal, as I just said, I'm just backtracking. The center of the crystal, the higher the frequency, and it is, to answer your question, Rich, it is fragile. You gotta handle crystals, you know, with some delicacy. Is that the right way to say it? But they are delicate. All right, let me let it drop. All right, any other questions? I don't want to spend, I could go on and on. I'm not even going into the repair end of it. I'm just giving you the background still, because I got to start, you know, somewhere until we go into actual troubleshooting. And I am jumping around a bit in doing so. So with that in mind, Rich, you asked the other question, how would you be able to check to see if a crystal is oscillating or not? And there's a number of techniques and methods which I've come up with to do that. So let me let it drop and just answer that question, and then we can go from there. So if somebody gives me a radio and says, I'm not hearing anything, or it's not transmitting on the right, on any frequency, there's no power coming out, the first place I would check is the oscillator to see if this oscillator is working, whether it be a crystal oscillator or a VFO, variable frequency oscillator, because that would make sense. You want to start there and make a measurement or listen to see if you hear that oscillator working. So I'll give you some methods the way I do it. By the way, I'm on a different rig, and if you hear some strange noises, this is the FTM-400, which I don't like this microphone. It's got some sounds to it it's making. I should go back to my Kenwood, so sorry about that. But I am listening to myself, so I know I'm being heard. The first thing that I would do in trying to see if the oscillator is working is to figure out what frequency it's supposed to be transmitting on. Actually, I didn't say that right. I should say the frequency that the oscillator or crystal is oscillating on, which may or may not be the final frequency coming out of the transmitter depending on the design of the circuit. So in sticking with the crystal itself, crystals are normally hammed with the frequency that they are resonating on, and that is called, in most cases, the fundamental frequency. And the reason why they say fundamental is because there are certain types of oscillators, which I didn't mention, which uses depending on the circuit designed, which takes that frequency and multiplies it to a different frequency, and it uses a circuit called an overtone circuit. Now, I got to look that up again. I just know that from memory. And there are crystals that are designed for overtone oscillators. And that is the word that they use, overtone. Tone is another name for frequency itself, or an oscillating frequency. So there are terminologies that you have to understand also and know. As an example, when you're checking a sideband transmitter, and I know I'm jumping ahead, you make what's called a two-tone test, and that is having two separate audio frequencies being introduced into the microphone, so you can look at the sideband signal coming out of the transmitter. The word tone means frequency itself. So there's the word overtone oscillator. You can look that up on the internet. Roy's probably looking it up right now, right, Roy? You're looking up overtone oscillators to see what it says.
You're a mind reader. I said you are a mind reader.
Of course. Now, I'm not asking you to explain overtones, but we can get into that. Again, I'm going back to my memory banks. I'm trying to remember what I learned years ago that I already forgot. But there are overtone oscillators and there are overtone crystals. So you can look up. All this information is on the internet. Again, giving you an overview of stuff that I learned by playing around. So, getting back to Mr. BZ's question. Initial question, how do you know if a crystal is working or not? You look at the crystal itself, and hopefully it has a crystal. If it doesn't have a crystal, then that's another story. We're not going to... That's a whole different ball game. But let's assume it's crystal controlled and it's not transmitting. And let's say, for argument's sake, the crystal is stamped on the frequency that the transmitter is supposed to be transmitting. So we're going to ignore any other circuits or phase lock loops, anything else that's in between. You know, let's say it's crystal controlled and that crystal is supposed to be transmitting. Well, I should say the transmitter should be transmitting on that frequency that the crystal has installed. Transmitting equipment, if you have no test equipment to see what's actually going on, an oscilloscope is very handy if it has the bandwidth to measure the frequency that you want to measure. A spectrum analyzer is also handy because that will actually show you in the frequency domain, I'm using that term, the actual location of the crystal's oscillating frequency, if it is working. If you don't see anything, if you don't see any signal, then you know the oscillator's out. What I mean by that is it's not oscillating for whatever reason. And it could be the crystal or it could be something else.
Andy Rich again. I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to have a lot of questions. This is assuming all the lights are on the rig, and it looks physically like it's working, but it's not. And the first thing you would do would look at the crystal. Is that the first thing right off the bat you would look at as being malfunctioning in some way? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. WHCDL, by the way. And you're listening to Andy's Corner. Yeah, that's one way to do it is to look at the crystal, see what frequency is stamped on it. But then again, you have to know the circuitry that's involved. You have to know if that's the actual transmit frequency that you're transmitting on. There are many devices out there that use one crystal to produce a single frequency, and that's it. I'm trying to think of a rig that's, other than a CB radio, that's designed for that. A CB is a good example. Because normally, it gets a little bit complicated now. Normally, the crystal frequency is the same as the frequency that stands on the crystal. But not necessarily the actual oscillating frequency of the crystal. And the reason why I say that is because I'm only saying that because what I said before, the thinner the crystal, the higher the frequency. You can only make a crystal so thin. you know, after that, you can't make a crystal anymore because it's so thin, there's only a certain number of thickness you can go to. So, what's the highest frequency that the crystal can be made? It is usually not in the CB band. It is usually much frequency below that. So what they do is they take other circuitry and they multiply it up. There are circuits called multipliers which take that frequency and they double it or they triple it. And it's usually an even multiplication. So it's times two, times three, times four, and so on. And that's another troubleshooting technique that you have to understand and know. But starting from the beginning with crystals, I'm starting at the beginning. So hopefully not to confuse anyone. So Rich, to answer your question, if you want to know if your crystal is oscillating, there's a number of ways to do it, as I mentioned. You could take a receiver, and if you see that the crystal is, let's say, transmitting at 10.1 megacycles, you know, arbitrarily speaking, if you had a receiver that's tunable to 10.1 megs, and you place that antenna near the crystal, you're going to get some radiation timed out. Sorry, let me get it back. My rig has a built-in timer. You can take that receiver, tune it to that frequency that's stamped on the crystal, and listen to see, or hear in this case, as you tune the receiver, listen to hear if you hear a quieting signal. There won't be any modulation or anything on it. It'll just be a quieting signal on that frequency. Usually, if you place the antenna from a receiver near the crystal or next to it, you will get enough energy that you will hear that in the receiver. Rich, you got that? Does that make sense?
Yes. Is that known as the beat frequency?
Yes, you could say that. Although you're not really beating against anything. A beat frequency is listening to two separate signals on the same frequency at the same time and comparing one to the other. The difference in the two frequencies that you're receiving will give you a tone, a beat note, which will be audible. It'll be in the audio range. That's what's known as that. A BFO on your old Shoei receiver, it was called a beat frequency oscillator, which is it could be tunable. It could be a tunable oscillator, or it could be a fixed oscillator with a variable adjustment that controls the gain of the oscillation. That oscillator is injected into the IF of the receiver, which will produce a beat note. You can now listen to either single sideband or CW signals. Okay, so that's what a BFO does in receivers. Okay, Rich, you got that?
WB2VAV will comment.
Ed is very familiar with BFOs. Go ahead, Ed.
If the receiver you have is capable of receiving CW on the frequency of the crystal, yes, you will definitely hear an audio tone, that is the beat note. However, you can do this trick with an AM receiver. There is not technically a beat note, but the audio of the dead carrier will sound different than the regular receiver noise. There's no modulation, but you'll definitely hear a difference in the background noise, and that is not a beat note.
Exactly. That's right. You're not gonna hear any beat note in this particular case. But the answer, which is BZ's question, he wants to know, of course, if you heard before, if the how do you know if an oscillator is working or not? if you don't have any test equipment to prove it. You know, let's say, I'm assuming you have no spectrum analyzer, you have no oscilloscope, all you have is a circuit and a crystal. A circuit that uses a crystal, and you want to know, is this circuit working? Is it producing a signal? You want to know if there's a signal that's being produced. So I'm taking the very elementary steps and not introducing any test equipment, because test equipment could be expensive, and who wants to spend money on that? So using a receiver, that's one way of doing it. Okay, Rich, you got that so far?
I've got it, Andy. Thanks.
Okay, now you could make, and then thanks, Ed, also. You could make a measurement, and also this is from experience. If a crystal is placed in a Pierce oscillator circuit, and you understand the schematic of what a Pierce oscillator looks like, and again you got to learn how to read schematics as a foundation, which I should have mentioned before. One of the fundamental things in troubleshooting is how to read a schematic diagram, because otherwise you would be lost. You wouldn't even know where to, you know, you wouldn't know where to go in the circuit. I think to read schematic diagrams is a whole separate topic, and there are books on that too. So that's a whole separate discussion. But getting back to the Pierce oscillator, if you study up on basic oscillator circuits, you will know and find out and discover, like I did, that at certain voltage points, you're going to see what is known as a negative voltage as opposed to a positive voltage. And Ed, you'll probably remember this. If you want to know if your oscillator is working, you can measure the voltage on the grid of the oscillator tube. And if you see a negative voltage there, you know it's oscillating to some degree.
There definitely are changes in the DC voltages as an oscillator circuit when it's oscillating or not oscillating. However, you have to do your homework first. You have to have a baseline, or it's 10 to 20 times harder to figure it out cold turkey than it is if you know what to look for.
Yeah, that's why if you, the other thing I should have mentioned is, if you're going to do any troubleshooting on your own, if you can get this service manual, that is chock full of all this information as far as servicing the radio or whatever you're trying to service. You know, even TV repairmen, going way back, you know, they can't remember every single TV set that was out there. I knew TV repairmen who simply just changed tubes. That's all they did. You know, the set was dead, they changed this tube, pull this tube out, put another tube in, turn it on, not changing it, not happening. Try another tube, not happening. And then eventually saying, oh, we got to pull it back to the shop. But knowing the schematic of the piece of equipment that you're working on and having the service manual so you know what points to measure these voltages that I'm measuring and I'm mentioning, they give you, the good companies will give you voltage readings on different tube elements and even on different transistor elements. And if you want to know if the circuit is working properly, you'll take a meter, and I may be jumping ahead by saying this again, you'll take an analog or a digital meter, and you will measure the points according to the service manual, and you'll see if they match or pretty close to match, and including the negative voltages that I'm mentioning.
Hey, Andy?
Yeah, go ahead.
you mentioned you don't want to spend a lot of money for test equipment. I consider a digital voltmeter now to be an exception to that rule. Because you can go into Harbor Freight Tools for like $7, buy a meter that I would have killed for in the day. It is a vacuum tube voltmeter, supposedly had an extremely high input impedance so it didn't load down the circuit. Got that. It had far more accuracy than the meters of the day. Got that. It's got more ranges than the meters of the day. Got that. We're now talking about $7.
Yeah, I'm, my mind is thinking back to the 1960s when I'm mentioning all of this because I'm in that era. Nowadays, you know, you could buy a multimeter really cheap, a digital multimeter, but I'm actually visualizing my old tube type meters, like a vacuum tube voltmeter, for instance, which has, by the way, as you know, as you mentioned, it's got an 11 megohm input. It's a very high impedance input, and that's used in aligning radios because it does not load down the circuit, just like you said. But I'm still in that era of using either my Simpson 260, which I still use all the time. It's a great meter, or my digital meter, depending on what I want to use. So, sticking to to the question that was asked, and that's that's part of the topics here. People asking questions on how to check. That's what this whole subject will be about. As a foundation. So, moving forward, I can continue Andy's corner with, questions about, troubleshooting and servicing and how to go about doing that. So as we expand on that, so, it'll open up a whole new, realm of different possibilities.
Andy, but the first thing you chose is crystals for a reason, or did you pass by the power supply? Are you assuming the power supply is working, and you went right to the crystal as something that you're looking at why this isn't transmitting correctly?
Yeah, I bypassed the power supplies now, and I was just concentrating on your question of how would you check to make sure a crystal was working, so I jumped right into that.
I didn't bring up the crystal in the beginning. You brought it up. I just asked, can it break and whatever. But I was wondering, is the first thing you would do if all the lights are on, you would just go where? If all the lights are on, you wouldn't go to the power supply, right? You'd go someplace else. Would that be the next thing you would check is the crystal? Go ahead.
I have an important statement, Andy.
Okay, by the way, just for understanding, folks out there, and I'll get to you, Ed. I didn't create a syllabus for this whole presentation. I'm just doing it as things pop into my head here. I have to refine this and make it in a more of a presentable, structure. Like a flow chart, starting from the very beginning, the power supply, the crystal, going on and on and on and so on. But right now, I'm sort of jumping around, and I said that. I'm jumping around a bit just to give an overview of a little bit of what's going on. I'm sort of doing it purposely. So just, bear with that, and keep that in mind. There's no set structure that I'm going by. I'm just randomly choosing something and talking about it. So understand that. Go ahead, Ed.
Let me point out to everybody, in this age of solid-state equipment running off of 10 volts, there is something that I don't want to get forgotten. When you're dealing with a vacuum tube transmitter, there are lethal voltages present. The last thing you want to do is blunder around. It could prove fatal. Now, once we pass that hurdle, one of those Harbor Freight $7 voltmeters set to the highest range DC and then going down is an excellent piece of test equipment to give you a sanity check on the functioning of pretty much any power supply. You want to verify you're getting a clean DC voltage somewhere where the output device wants to see, which would be around, you know, 13.6 volts is ideal for a modern rate. And then you look up the, if it's a transmitting tube, you look up, like most 100-watt transmitters need anywhere from 500 to 750 plate volts. And that Harbor Freight $7 voltmeter is fine for that. All you really want to do is see, is it putting out the DC voltage? Back to Andy.
Okay, WA2CDL. I'm just trying to, reorganize some of the things that we mentioned so far. Yeah, power supplies do that, do produce lethal voltages. You have to be careful, but I'm not getting into the power supply discussion as of yet. I know questions are asked, you know, what if a crystal is this or a crystal is that, what happens to a circuit, and so on. Basically, you know, getting back to what I said in the beginning, you really have to know what the problem is turned into the radio, meaning that, you know, what is the radio not doing? If you know you have a transmitter or a transceiver or a receiver in front of you, and it's not receiving, the question is, you know, why is it not receiving and what's not receiving? You know, meaning what portion of it is not receiving? Are you, don't hear anything? Is it lighting up or what have you? If you have no power at all, if it's dead, then you can get into the power supply section of it right off the bat and to see if the power supply is working or if the batteries are installed, if it's a battery-operated radio or what have you. I'm trying to avoid anything that's more modern or recent, like solid state stuff, because in this age of microprocessors, and I can tell you from experience, just because the radio is off, and this is important to know, not only for your radio but for your appliances in your house and even in your car, just because the radio is turned off doesn't mean that it's drawing power from your wall socket, meaning that you have it plugged into 117 volts and your TV is off, but there's a part of your TV that is on all the time. So in microprocessor technology, circuits are completely different. The turn on sequence is completely different than where I'm going. I'm trying to go back to the 60s before we had this, this technology that we have now, and try to simplify that, if that makes any sense. And as an example of what I just said, I'm sure most of you guys out there have a remote control TV, and you use the remote control to turn the TV on and off. Well, how does the receiver, the remote receiver, know in the first place that you're turning the TV on? It has to have power. There's got to be some power supply in that TV set that is powering that receiver, that infrared receiver that you use your remote for to turn on the TV in the first place. So we live in that age where that is happening around us all the time, even though we may not even think about it. And just because your radio is off doesn't mean it's actually off. And that's a very good point to know and to keep in mind. WA2CDL.
W2BC, that was a big scandal with Cablevision. People were not aware that their set-top boxes were always on and eating up electricity. And then I think this is about 2 or 3 years ago, they found out how much electricity was actually being used when they thought it was totally off, and it hit the paper back then.
Who put your hand on top of one of those units when it's turned off, and you'll notice it's warm.
I think this W2BZ, I think I doubled.
I said, if you put your hand on top of one of those cable boxes when it supposedly is turned off, you will notice it is warm.
Right, but nobody knew that because it you turn something off and the thing goes click and maybe the light dims or whatever. You think the thing went off or all the lights dim. You're under the assumption that you're not using any electricity. Well, you were using a lot of electricity. People didn't know that. And then about 2 or 3 years ago, there was a big article in Newsday or wherever about just about how much electricity you actually were using. Go ahead.
How much did they say you were using?
That I forget. But a significant amount. Enough for people to be quote unquote outraged.
I remember WS2N.
Cool.
I remember reading 25 watts. Yeah, like you said a couple of years ago, that article came out. And sure enough, yeah, you put your hand over it, you could feel the heat.
Yeah, I was going to say, I measured it, and it's 25 watts. See, Paul, we agree on something.
It's a good night.
Hi, WHCDL is back. Let me just see if I have it. Okay, very good. And, I've experienced the same thing with my set-top box. But I already knew that it's on all the time. I just knew that, and you can feel the heat, and it's but I don't know what the power consumption in the standby mode is. But I will say this: I bought a new car recently, and there's a little tag on the battery, on the positive battery terminal, that says "Do not disconnect." And of course, I read the owner's manual. To try to find out, in case of difficulties with batteries or what have you in the car, that I have to replace it or disconnect it, what's the reason? And they actually said that the computer in the car, when you disconnect the battery, apparently doesn't have any memory battery backup. And not that it's going to affect it performance, but it sort of has to relearn the engine when you disconnect the battery. There is a sequence of events that you have to do. They make a device, I understand, and Advanced Auto Parts sells this, and Ed, you probably know about this too, which I was told, I did not buy it, that you plug into your cigarette lighter, and I never bought it, but this is what I was told. You plug it into the cigarette lighter and you connect it to your battery. As you disconnect the battery, something to that effect. Or, no, that doesn't make any sense the way I said that. If you disconnect the battery, you're going to disconnect the voltage from the cigarette lighter. It's probably a self-powered device that keeps I'm correcting myself as I go along. It produces a keep alive voltage on the battery terminals, preventing the processor or the computer from going into a different mode. I believe that's the way it was designed.
Correct. 2GJE. Andy, back to the crystal. What if the crystal is good, then what?
GJE, go ahead.
Correct, Andy. Don't disconnect your battery if you're going to put a new one in. First, you have to plug this little device into the cigarette lighter, and that will keep the computer alive. If you don't do that, it's not a matter of self-learning. you're going to have to go back to the dealer for a matter of reprogramming. You plug this device into the cigarette lighter, then you can disconnect the old battery, plug in the new battery. If you don't do that, you got major troubles, over.
B3AG again.
Ed, go ahead.
Must have doubled. I said, plug this device into the cigarette lighter to keep all the computers in the vehicle live. Then you disconnect the bad or old battery and replace the new battery. If you don't do this, it's not a matter of relearning. It's a matter of reprogramming. Over.
We heard you, Ed. Thanks. Ed, DAV, go ahead.
I agree 100%. Although you don't have to buy a particular part. If you have, say, a battery charger or something, just hook that up. You know, batteries do not last the life of the car. Sooner or later, that battery is going to have to be changed. And what you do is you hook up some battery charger, which is basically what the device you're describing is, and so that you keep the line live when you change out the battery. I agree 100%. And yes, if you let it go dead, you lose a lot of memory. And what usually has happened is the car comes from the factory with default values, and then as you drive, it kind of learns your style and tweaks some parameters, and you lose all that. But to have to have it brought back and reprogrammed, because if you can get the car started, and if you can't get it started, then you have to have it towed, which is ridiculous. And even if you have to drive it there, that's ridiculous. And as a career design engineer, designing a piece of equipment that cannot be disconnected and then reconnected without major things like that makes no sense at all, and borders on, professional incompetence. Yeah, the rule is the car will not run the same for the first couple of days. Back, Andy.
Okay, thanks, Ed. Good information. And it basically alluded to that in the manuals that I have in my car. And there's many, many different manuals. It's a lot of reading. Okay. I'm going to wrap it up. I see it's about 5 to 10. I know Paul has to come on and a few others. This is a long, drawn discussion as far as, or just a drawn out discussion in regarding to troubleshooting. There's a lot to talk about. And again, you know, I know I'm jumping around a bit. In the future, I'm thinking now of just coming up with basic receiver troubleshooting as one topic, and then basic transmitter troubleshooting as another topic, and basic power supply. In other words, break it up into different sections of a particular radio. Maybe I'll do it that way. As I said, right now I'm just getting my feet wet and just trying to muddle my way through different things, and I started out with the CB stuff. Because that's how I started. In particular, I started learning how to troubleshoot by taking apart my CB radio and digging into it a bit and learning about the crystals and the oscillators and the receiver and the IFs and on it goes. So I just had to start somewhere with that. But I think in the future, maybe I'll give a discussion on, you know, basic power supply troubleshooting, which in itself is a discussion. There's a lot of different power supplies. There's switching supplies. There's brute force supplies. There's bucking. There's what do they call that? A bucking supply. And there's another name. I can't remember the name. Passive supplies. And that's a whole topic in itself. So just want to say that. Let me just let it drop. Okay, I think that'll be it for now. I know we spun off on different subjects, because that's what happens. You know, one thing leads to another, which leads to another, and so on, and that's the way it goes. But if anybody, I'll leave it with this. If anybody has any particular questions as far as a troubleshooting problem, if anybody has a radio that needs to be repaired, bring it up next week, and we'll talk about that particular repair also. You know, besides the discussions that we'll try to get into. And I'll get some books out on this also, just to refresh my memory. Because it gets involved. But again, if anybody has any radios that wanted that they need fixing, and we can go through it together on the air and sort of sort out where to start to get some ideas. Because, you know, look, the bottom line is we live in a very high-tech world right now. Everything is changing so quickly. It's very hard to keep up with it, even for myself. You have to learn. You take your average amateur radio now. It's got touchscreen displays. It's got all these different menus. It comes up. It's got Bluetooth. It's got USBs in the back. It's got computers. You know, it goes on and on and on and on and on. All these different circuits that are all married together. So it's not as simple as it used to be. And all this is packaged into a small little box that you could never imagine being the size that it is. And to actually troubleshoot down to a component to figure out what component is causing an issue is it's mind-boggling. We live in this age now where even technicians won't go down to troubleshooting down to a board level component. It's rare. It's become more rare as time goes on. They don't want to waste their time. If they find that there's a bad part on a board, they're not going to go down to that part level. They're not going to go down to the component. They're just going to replace the board because it's faster, cheaper, and easier to do.
Comment.
Okay, yeah, Tommy, just finished with that. But you know, given myself, because I'm a curious guy, I like to get down to the components that are actually causing the problem. And that takes, sort of like fine-tuning skill. And you have to have a good eye and a steady hand. Because you can hardly see these components that are causing these problems. And literally, it's like a speck of dust or a speck of dirt looking at some of the components that are surface mounted in this day and age. And that's why you can buy yourself, a Bofang radio. Does many things. Can you imagine building and designing something that does as much as a Bofang about 50 years ago? It would be the size of a refrigerator. Or more. It's amazing how they can squeeze everything and charge only $30 for something like this because they're so mass produced. So, yeah. We are in that technological age of doing things this way. The way I'm describing it. Go ahead, question. Go ahead, BZ. Go W-A-T-C-D-O.
Yeah, you see, my next question would have been, Assuming the crystal is good, and I know, we're this part of the TechNet is over. I'm not asking you to answer this, but my next question would be, assuming that the crystal is good, what do you do next? Okay, that's what my next question would be, and then, on and on and on and on. And I think starting off with crystals is great because there we all did, or of a certain age, we all did, and they're much simpler to visualize. I remember the cases around the crystals and the stamps and the frequencies. I remember them as if I could see them in front of me as if it was yesterday. So that's also, go step by step. If it's not this, then it's that. If it's not that, then it's this. And through the different sections of whatever equipment you're talking about, which would probably be a transceiver. So that's all. Just my thoughts, Andy. Thanks. Really appreciate it.
Say that again. One word answer. Oscilloscope. That's what you need to troubleshoot.
Yep, I agree. Let me just let get the beep come back. Yeah, what I'm doing, I agree 100%. But what I'm doing is I'm trying.